Pain is the most common reason patients seek medical care. Pain accounts for considerable suffering, decreased quality of life, and conditions such as depression and substance abuse. For a number of reasons, though, pain is undertreated. That's why the American Academy of Family Physicians convened a unique group of organizations to develop and promote a series of five programs for primary care providers across the country to promote better pain management. Dr. Ann Carty is the medical director of the Academy's Continuing Medical Education Program. Dr. Carty, let's first talk about what brought these organizations to address this issue, and let's list those quickly. The American Academy of Pain Medicine, the Center for Practical Bioethics, the Federation of State Medical Boards, the Federation of State Medical Boards Foundation, along with the American Academy of Family Physicians. What brought all of you together?
These organizations have a long history of addressing these issues at the medical level and at the policy level, and the groups have come together to work on promoting better pain management through a series of educational programs for physicians, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, primary care providers, and people interested in improved patient care.
Now, what's your hope that this series will achieve?
My personal hope is that physicians gain a better comfort level with diagnosis and management, treatment of pain, and patient follow-up.
Now, the faculty for this program is quite impressive. You have quite a mix of individuals who have been taking care or addressing this issue for quite some time.
There are several content development faculty that have been involved in the program since the beginning. The faculty represent people from different organizations. American Academy of Family Physicians and the Center for Practical Bioethics happen to both be in Kansas City, and so we've been able to collaborate on several projects. Myra Christopher, in particular, is president and chief executive officer of the Center for Practical Bioethics. She has worked on numerous advisory boards regarding pain management and the Federation of State Medical Boards. The other two primary content developers for this series are both physicians. Dr. Bill McCarberg is an assistant clinical professor at the University of California in San Diego, and he is a board-certified family physician by the American Board of Family Medicine, but also has additional training in geriatrics and is certified with the American College of Pain Medicine. Dr. Scott Fishman works with the Division of Pain Medicine. He's the chief and professor of anesthesiology and pain medicine at University of California, Davis. So his specialty is internal medicine, also psychiatry, pain medicine, and palliative medicine. So the collaboration of subspecialists for pain control, including primary care family physicians, and the Center for Practical Bioethics gives a unique perspective in the collaboration of this educational program.
Describe, Dr. Carter, if you would please, the education process that these sessions employ.
I think it's important to note that adult learners are different than children learning, and these sessions therefore reflect that educational design. The environments, it's a learning environment that has audience response questions. There are pre-assessment, post-assessments, and interactive sessions that incorporate these type questions and case presentations and case studies into the didactic lecture part. They've been designed to have layered learning, so what information is shared at the session level can then be taken back to practice that day, that afternoon. Hopefully, these increased interactivity reinforce learning, reinforce memory, and can show improved outcomes again down the line. And we're hoping that the assessments show that the results are reproducible and that this educational model can be replicated with similar results in topics with pain, but there are other topics we're using too.
Now, the programs are divided into three parts. Let's talk about the first, patient-centered pain management. That would seem to make sense that the patient should be in the middle of all this.
Well, it should, and pain management still is of the top five concerns for family physicians. There are ethical complexities in managing pain. for various conditions. Patients, as far as their care and their treatment plan, it's helpful for physicians to quantify the pain, for patients to quantify the pain, whether that's a numeric scale or a visual analog, and assessing involves diagnosis, management, and treatment with the comorbid conditions. So if it's patient-centered pain management, there are just different pieces to that. There's also, in the first session, practices for managing risks and preserving professional integrity. I think that's a concern for physicians with continued pain management prescriptions. And that means there are pharmacologic interventions and non-pharmacologic interventions.
Now, is some of this complicated by the fact that there is this tension between the medical community and the legal community whenever it comes to prescription pain medications?
There is concern, and the risk of prescription management, but the Federation of State Medical Boards has suggested some policies on monitoring the controlled substances and treatment for pain. Patient outcomes should be the primary goal, and improved patient and pain management, but safety perspectives for the physician as well, involving accurate workup and evaluation and management and treatment. From the risk management perspective, chart reviews and documentation, and the treatment plan and objectives and risks and benefit of specific types of treatment. There should be informed consent, and then there should be periodic review and close follow-up.
Section 2, or Session 2, is focused on balancing therapies for comorbidity of pain with psychiatric conditions. What does this session address?
This session talks about a systematic approach with pathophysiology and, again, evaluation of pain. There are social aspects to pain, but it also should involve a psychological evaluation. When someone is trying to delineate pain, there's a difference between acute pain, which implies tissue injury, and when that pain perception changes or it lasts longer, becomes the chronic pain perspective. And the literature talks about that being more like a six-month period of pain. But the pain can be initial tissue injury, nociceptive, how the nerves sense it. It can be neuropathic, and it's the neurologic response to some type of an injury or non-nerve injury, but there can also be mixed issues. And session two talks about, again, evaluation as it relates to radiologic examination. And it's interesting that only 4% of patients with an acute lumbar pain, lower back pain, and sciatica have a detectable disc herniation that's found on radiologic examination. So what that means is that there are often radiologic findings in patients that don't have back pain at all. And not all neurologic findings clinically always correlate with the imaging studies.
So there's no physical evidence of pain in those situations? Am I hearing you correctly?
Sometimes it can be quantified, and patient perception of pain still means the pain is there, but there may not be an objective X-ray proven reason for the pain, but the pain is still there.
The third and final session addresses combination therapies for pain management. This appears to be a delicate balancing act required by the physician.
It is, and selecting appropriate sequencing and timing of the pharmacologic and the non-pharmacologic therapies is important there. That, again, goes back to the assessment and history and physical examination, pain evaluation, description, and perhaps the mechanism of the original pain. But treatment, the pharmacologic treatment depends on the diagnosis and perhaps the mechanism of the pain initially. But there are non-opioid analgesics and opioid analgesics, and it appears that opioids just aren't for everyone. They seem to work for some. They're ineffective for others. And there are groups of patients that it seems to be just problematic, and it's hard to know which patients are in which group. And they can be used safely with efficacy chronically. But it's up to the physician to learn the art and not necessarily the science to determine where that efficacy and the safety is. And it's also important to note that there are non-analgesic pain medication modifiers. So there's other medications and other classes of drugs that can be used that historically are not thought of as pain medications, but they're adjunctive care.
Is this where we have a continuing balancing act, and we've talked about this before, that balancing act between addiction and a dependency? And that is a difficult thing, I would imagine, to work out between physician and patient.
It is. And when you're addressing non-opioids and opioids and adjunctive care medications, when they involve even different types of anxiolytics or psychiatric medications, sometimes it does have the comorbidity of an underlying psychiatric diagnosis. So there is a difference between physical dependence and physical tolerance, pseudo-addiction, and addiction as it relates to chronic pain medications.
This, too, is where we talk about in this third and final session about when it's appropriate to refer patients to a specialist. What kind of guidelines or suggestions are there for doing that very thing?
Well, I think in general, a multidisciplinary treatment approach is ideal when management and the patient's not improving, period. That's when subspecialty referral would be indicated, if nothing else, for second opinion. Sometimes the non-pharmacologic approach of a team helps encourage patient participation in some of these other activities, increasing physical activity, improving mood and sleep and general health. And sometimes it takes another perspective from the primary care physician and a pain specialist to work together to improve the patient's level of pain.
So what's next?
There seems to be a paradigm shift in prescribing opioids, and it's a public health crisis because of undertreated pain and then this concern about prescription drug abuse. There needs to be a safe and effective way to manage pain, and we need to decrease barriers to this use and increase the safety. I think it's important statistically to be aware. Nearly 7 million Americans are abusing prescription drugs, and that's an 80% increase in 6 years. So as we look at what's next, we need to be aware of that. And it's also important to note that nearly 1 in 10 high school seniors admit to abusing prescription painkillers.
Dr. Ann Carty, Medical Director of the American Academy of Family Physicians, continuing medical education. Thanks for your time and best wishes.
Thank you.
For more information on the AAFP Live series on pain management, visit www.aafplive.org. That's www.aafplive.org. I'm Lorella Boone. Thanks for listening.